Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Al.
And I'm Anton, and we're back with a slightly diet version of the show, but filled with nice, interesting stuff, aren't we?
It's going to be absolutely fine. It is lighter, but that's okay, because it gives us time to talk about other stuff, and, also for me to warm up to the quiz, in which I really have to win, otherwise it's starting to sneak away from me tonight. But before we do get into all that, Al, have you played anything this week?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me. Have I played anything this week? I genuinely don't think I've actually picked up the Switch. It was a super busy week, and then I'm ashamed to admit this, but I was away at the weekend. I was over in Amsterdam for a wedding. I didn't take the Switch with me because I was thinking, it's just trying to get through airport security at the moment is a pain. Having to take electronics out is just an extra pain. So I just took an old-fashioned paper book and read that. So I didn't take my Switch with me, even though I was travelling for, an hour each way and had a little bit of time, I guess, sitting in a hotel room. But no, I took an old-fashioned paper book, so no, I've let the side down thoroughly. I'm very sorry. Please forgive me, please. Mike's not forgiving me. I can see in his face.
I've just gone silent. I'm not going to speak to you ever again.
I would be angry, but I have similarly been reading. But to keep it up, it has been Reggie's new book, which has been quite fun. I think what is quite novel about it so far, I'm about maybe 40-50% in, is it's one of the few books I've read about business that isn't been like, I'm this incredible founder that dropped out of college and then started this in my basement and then read it to the top. It's very much somebody navigating a business world and kind of, I suppose, being a team player, working with, different departments or people at similar kind of high levels in the company, such as being the head of Nintendo America, but not Nintendo worldwide. And that kind of angle is quite nice. And it's also very lovely to get a kind of glimpse behind the veil of Nintendo and their operations as such a private company. And already there's been some kind of interesting tidbits, which I've just seen people running with making articles, so it's been a lovely read.
Yeah, that sounds definitely something that I would like to read. Well, I knew I would before, so we'll get your full review at the end, and maybe you could do a YouTube one for us or something as well.
I like your thinking.
That would be our first YouTube book review.
Well, I might be thinking outside the box here, but I've actually played a bit of Switch this week, which has been really nice.
Thank goodness.
I've finally started Kirby. So I kind of, because I'm not getting much time to play co-op, I decided I'm just going to go for it and play single player. And I'm really, really enjoying it. And I actually agree entirely with Al in that I changed the control scheme to the B option, which changed where jump and action was. And I think that's what you did, Al, wasn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's exactly what I did. The original sort of default control scheme is just backwards, in my opinion.
Yeah. Did the exact same thing.
Really?
I think something's a little odd there.
Yeah, it's the only sort of slight thing, but the fact that you have the option is really good. And it's just good. It's nice and relaxing. It's easy enough to play that you don't get too stressed by it unless you're really going for, like Anton did, the 100%. And it's, it's nice. I like the worlds. I'm not hugely far into it. I think I'm on the second or the third world or something, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm definitely going to see it through because it's really enjoyable. I also, as a side note,
before you move off Kirby, actually, it's funny. I've not deliberately stopped playing Kirby, but I think the reason I've kind of accidentally stopped playing Kirby is because I got stuck. Right. I got to a bit where I was fighting, I'm going to say he's like a giant lion. Anton will know what I'm talking about. Yep. And I tried it about, I don't know, four or five times when I was on holiday last time over in Singapore, and went, I can't do this, and I've just not gone back to it because I got so frustrated with dying sort of four times in a row and not getting anywhere close to defeating them that I've just not felt the need to go back and try it again. I mean, how difficult is that boss to actually beat, and how far away am I from the end? Is it worth...
Yeah, so there is a bit more to go. However, do tell me to get lost if this is already what you're doing. What I did is get a bunch of the speed power up, and you can basically pocket and the extra health power up. So basically went in there, kind of wore through my health and used the speed power up to kind of get further through it, and then used the extra life to help carry me through, and used the gun, and that was upgraded, or the Ranger Kirby.
Yeah, I think mine's at max upgrade setting. Okay, good to know. I will try this again at some point and see if I can get through it. Nice. Anton's gaming tips. Carry on, Mike. I've interrupted
just
you.
Spoiler-free gamer tips.
Just on that, before we do move on that note of tips, do you remember in magazines the section where it would be how to complete something, or how what to do, or and then there'd be the cheat section as well?
Yep, I remember that fondly.
It was really fun. Like the kind of, I'm talking kind of early 90s, probably SNES, Mega Drive kind of era. And yeah, bring back that in magazines. Bring back magazines, because I love a magazine.
We should bring this back. We should just find a little random little cheat or a little guide and just wedge one into the back end of every episode. So if people want to listen to it, they can. If they don't want to hear it, they can just stop before we get there.
That's a very cool idea. The other game I played this week is something I've completed, but we have someone staying with us that hasn't played it. So we played Snipper Clips.
Hey, what a great game that is.
Yeah, I mean, I love Snipper Clips. The first time round, it was fantastic. Because I've completed it, it's unlocked the mode with any shapes as well, which makes it a bit more ridiculous. But it's just a really, really, really good game, and a lot of fun, and just, yeah, I love it. I still love it. And it's probably 4 years, 5 years maybe since I played it, because... or almost 5 years. Almost. Because this month, 5 years ago, the Switch came out. When did the Switch come out in 2017?
I guess it was March, wasn't it?
It was March. Yep. Of course it was. Yeah, so it probably is around 5 years since I played it, because it was I think it was launch title, was it, Anton?
Indeed. And I must confess, you know, they did that a little bit of DLC, a small DLC, but...
They did.
It feels like a game that is just prime candidate for a sequel. I think maybe applying it to more... an adventurous style where, you know, if you got maybe bigger levels and puzzles to kind of get through levels could be quite fun, or even just doubling in with some more complicated puzzles. It's a fantastic, and I think because it came out so early in the Switch lifespan, a little bit of a neglected Switch gem.
Yeah, if you haven't ever played it, I thoroughly recommend it, especially if you're looking for something to play as a co-op, or actually now it's got 3 and 4. I think they updated it at one point, so you can now play it 3 or 4 player, which I just think is ace. So definitely forget about Snipper Clips a lot, and it's a really good game. So that's what I've been playing this week. I'm actually going to try and play some more Kirby tonight if I can. I've got a few other games to get into as well, but I'm just glad to have got onto a game at all, to be honest, because it's been pretty tough as of late. In terms of the podcast, another huge thank you to everybody who's been listening regularly. And remember, if you want to leave us a review, you can do that. Best place is probably Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a review there. And we really appreciate it if you do. Remember that everything we do for this podcast, all the everything we get in goes back into the podcast. And on that note, Al, we've got a really busy and fun Discord channel, which if you're a Patreon, you can sign up to.
You can indeed, where you can, I always say you can chat with us, but actually lately we have all been a bit rubbish at chatting on there, but everyone else has been chatting like crazy. I mean, we're sort of letting the side down here, chaps. We need to get back in there and actually do our jobs. But, you know, they seem fine without us. Just periodically dip in. You can basically chat with us, and we are always around, and it's just a lovely wee gaming community, but they talk about everything. It's not just games in there. I mean, we've got sub little Discords for, there's a book club in there, there's Formula One, there's kickball stuff that you guys, well, I'm looking at Mike here, sometimes talk about. We talk movies and just generally life in general. There's so much supportive messages going in there constantly, with people having dramas in their lives and everyone just helping out. It's lovely. Oh, it's the best part. But and in addition to that, you get all your extra content that comes along with the different tiers, and there's a mug on its way, which I was actually chasing up just yesterday because the company I've ordered from have gone suspiciously quiet.
Okay, well, we'll get
there. Talk about that one later.
We'll figure that out. That's slightly terrifying. Anton, just on the topic of our amazing support that we get, we've also got the YouTube channel as well, don't we?
Indeed, yeah, we've got a brand new review up this week by Louise of Dandy and Randy DX. It's a kind of novel new co-op game. And yeah, it's really fallen under the radar. I think people just haven't found it yet. So do jump on the YouTube, give it a wee watch. Not even the fact that there's very little reviews on it yet. Not many people have played it. I've checked in on Steam and it's just nobody's really discovered it yet. So do check out the review, because it's seemingly falling under the radar.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
There we go. Check it out. And it is time to move on and talk about this week's news.
Tell us that people want to know.
First up, a game that Anton and I discussed on our episode of Roundup, which is one of the podcasts that Al just mentioned that our Patreons do get. And it's a game called Nirvana, nothing to do with Smells Like Teen Spirit, but it's from Red Deer Games and Dev9K. And it's a racing visual novel. It's out now for $5.99. Bit of an unusual combination of games, of genres, I should say, to have in a game. But I think this, it might just work, Anton.
Yeah, you know, this is definitely one I did not expect to come out of the random video game generator, but I love it. It's quite quirky. It's the kind of racing is a little bit slightly runner-esque/PS1 inspired. It is very much stylized, but I think in terms of adding a bit of gameplay to a visual novel, it serves its function. And for $5.99, I feel like you're getting a very unique and bizarre title here. I'm kind of in love with it. I think it looks very charming, Al. How about yourself as the racing veteran of the lot of us?
I don't know what to make of this. I love the idea of combining a visual novel and a racing game, because there's a lot of possibility that could come out of this. And the art style of the visual novel bit is cool. I mean, it's basically harking back to the kind of the 1980s kind of cartoons that Mike and I would have watched, sort of kind of Japanese anime along the lines of, you know, like the Thundercats or that kind of style. It's wholesome and comforting, and I love that aspect of it. And then it's kind of balanced against this really, really low poly count 3D racing bit with sort of deliberate hazing. It sort of looks like you're watching an old CRT that's kind of tearing a little bit. And it's just, it's kind of, I can't decide if I like it or not. But weirdly, this is a game that's been around for a while, and this is just, I don't quite know how to describe this. It was a bit more raunchy, let's say, in previous iterations, and they've pulled out the raunchiness and have left just a game with a love story and some racing in it. And I think that's just such a unique proposition. It's just bonkers. And for that kind of price, you can't really say no. In fact, I think they've got a launch deal, they're not. I know in the States, if you buy it at the moment, it's $1.99. I imagine there's probably a UK or Europe equivalent price kicking around somewhere, is there?
I think I should have that to hand.
The UK price, well, yeah, so we got $5.99, I think, so.
Oh, $1.79 in the UK, I might actually pick that one up.
There you go, yeah, so at that price, it's kind of just a no-brainer. Plus, yeah, it's got cool music as well. It's like, I think they described it as metal, new wave synth or something like that. It's just cool.
Oh, well. Yeah, it looks good. I like the look of it. Next up, Streamer Ninja have pitched Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Competition, in which he would invest $500,000 to make it happen. However, Nintendo ghosted him. I mean, I'm not surprised, Anton, that Nintendo ghosted him.
Yeah, you know, it really speaks to how fragile your reputation is if, like, you're willing to put that much money on the table and the company's like, nah, we're good. Which, admittedly, combined with the fact Nintendo has shown almost negative interest in making Smash and their games competitive, which always winds me up that they marketed Splatoon as like an esports title when they unveiled the Switch, and I've been so anti-esports in every facet. Disappointing, not surprising, and yeah, it's a real shame for Smash fans.
It's exactly as you'd expect Nintendo to react, isn't it? I mean, I suppose if you're Nintendo, $500,000 is like, you lift up a couch cushion, you probably find it under there. I mean, $500,000 is pennies to Nintendo. but it's a lot of money to everyone else in the real world. And yeah, the fact that Nintendo have just ghosted, just, I would say it speaks volumes, but I would expect nothing less of them. It's just not their bag, and I guess they don't want to get into the position of being called out by gamers and streamers. They're old school, and they do things their way, on their terms, when they want to. They don't bow to anybody. We are Nintendo. That's pretty much their approach, isn't it? So yeah, this is no big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at the numbers that I'm about to talk about here, then it probably puts it into perspective. So Nintendo have generated 1.8 billion from their mobile titles. That's Fire Emblem Heroes. That made just under a billion, 983 million. Small change there. Animal Crossing Pocket Camp made $276 million, and Mario Kart Tour, $270 million. Now, we know that Fire Emblem Heroes has a huge following in other parts of the world. Mario Kart Tour, Al has contributed to that with, what, a fiver?
A fiver on a couple of occasions. I mean, right. I've probably paid close to 40 or 50 quid, I guess, the time I've had that game, because every so often I go, you know what? I'm still really enjoying this. I'll chuck another fiver at it. Mm. And when I get to the value of, like, a full Mario Kart, I'll stop paying them, which is probably about now. But I've had so much enjoyment. I've literally played that game every day for the last, I don't know, whatever it launched, 2 years ago, I guess. And I suspect it will just keep going from strength to strength, especially now that they've moved a whole lot of the courses that appeared there into the main Mario Kart, Mario Kart 8. I suspect some players will go, oh, these are really good. I'm going to go give Mario Kart Tour a shout. It won't be long before they start marketing Tour somehow in 8. I guarantee it. And I do wonder if it'll ever surpass Fire Emblem Heroes, because Fire Emblem Heroes has been out for significantly longer. I think about two more years. I think it's been out for about 4 years now. Might even be five. So it's been kicking around for a while. It's had time to generate its staggering 983 million. And Mario Kart Tour might well get there. Whether Animal Crossing Pocket Camp does or not, I suspect it's probably had its peak. But I could be proved wrong. What do you think, Anton?
You know, there are a couple other titles that didn't make the podium for generating money, such as Super Mario Run, which is sad because I really liked the monetization structure of that one. But it's just extraordinary to see how much money these games can make. Obviously, these games will probably, at least the core fundamentals, will be a lot cheaper to develop than I presume their console counterparts. And yeah, it's just extraordinary to see, and makes total sense that these games are just getting such strong support. Animal Crossing Pocket Camp's quite an old title now, and it's still getting new content regularly.
Yeah, I may disagree with you, actually, on the core mechanic, because I suspect the core mechanics in Mario Kart Tour are actually a lot more complicated than they were for 8. I mean, the graphics in 8 are obviously much more impressive because it's running on a different platform, but there's a lot more goes on in terms of Tour than you might imagine. I suspect it's probably equally, if not more, complicated than Mario Kart 8. I mean, admittedly, the control system is different. You're literally just sliding your finger to move left and right. You don't have the same, you know, button control and same fidelity that you might have in Mario Kart 8, but there's so much more goes on in there in terms of how the game works, sits, fits together, knits together all the different mechanics and different pieces. It's a complicated game. They've spent a lot of time, money and effort on making a very good game.
Yeah, well, it's reflected in the money that it's generated, as are most Nintendo anything, pretty much. I mean, I think if they went back to playing cards, it would probably generate as much money. Well, there are Nintendo playing cards, but yeah, you get the point. So, on to another retro title, and that is Monkey Island. So, exciting news recently that Al and I were very excited about is Return to Monkey Island was going to be released, and it's from the creator, Rob Gilbert, who is a bit of a legend, and he said, I didn't want Return to Monkey Island to be just a throwback game. I wanted to keep moving Monkey Island forward, and it's ironic that people who don't want me to make the game I want to make are some of the hardcore Monkey Island fans, and that's what makes me sad about all the comments. The interesting thing is, Anton, the game's not actually out, but I'm assuming people are basing this on what they've seen so far, or are they just the vibe of it because of the, is it because of the art style that they're not so keen?
Yeah, it's seemingly after, you know, I think one or two episodes back we discussed that they showed a little teaser of what the visual aesthetic of the game would be. And yeah, I think a lot more fans are wanting it to be like the originals, which is a real shame, as personally I thought it looked quite charming and glamorous. It looked real good. I remember there was a similar reception to Streets of Rage 4 once it first came, that it first got shown off, which faded once people saw more of it and actually got to play it. So I have a feeling that once this game comes out, and if it lives up to the quality of the original ones, hopefully this will be something that we see in the distant memory, because I think, you know, in his statement, he also kind of mentioned Thimbleweed Park being regarded only as like a throwback title and not wanting Monkey Island to kind of fall into that box. And to be honest, I completely agree with that idea and way of looking at things, Al.
Yeah, I mean, it's cliched, but haters will hate. And at the end of the day, games are not judged on how they look generally. They're judged on a whole raft of things, and mostly they're judged on how well they play and how good they are, how well written they are, how good puzzles are, particularly in these kinds of games. And that's really what made Monkey Island stand out in the first place. It was hilarious, it was clever, it was smart, it was, wasn't their art style that made it what it was. And this sequel will presumably have all the stuff that people loved about the old one, just updated to the modern era, so it's accessible, it's attractive, and it takes advantage of what we've learned in the past, not, it doesn't just, you know, rely on nostalgia. And that's a good thing. I mean, I'm kind of really annoyed at people getting hung up about this. It's just, it's small-minded and stupid. Just get on with the program, people. Leave the guy to create the best game that we can possibly get, and at the end of the day, if the game's rubbish, then you can complain. It probably won't be.
It's an interesting thing, because Thimbleweed Park, I have played most of, and it is very reminiscent and true to the style of the 90s, even down to some of the frustrating parts of trying to combine things and they don't work. But you get that with a lot of point and clicks even today, but it's still got a lot of that to it. But I don't think that Ron Gilbert would be making this game if it wasn't for that Thimbleweed Park. And of course, that game has a very different set of circumstances, not part of a franchise. It came after a big gap of kind of nothing from him as a creator. So this is probably more, as much as I'm sure Thimbleweed Park you'll absolutely have loved doing, this is probably where he's thinking, great, I can now show all those skills that I've got in storytelling and humor and creating a game, but we're going to do it in a different way now because, you know, it's 2022 and I want to try something different. He probably couldn't do that with Thimbleweed Park in order to get back into kind of people's minds and consciousness, and I wonder if that's probably what's frustrating. He's probably gone through the whole Thimbleweed Park thing, gone, great, this is a throwback game, I love it, but it is a throwback. Now I get to do something else because people remember who I am now, and now everyone's kind of going, actually, do more of that.
It's like getting a brilliant director and being like, I love all of your work. Please never go into HD. I want it to be 40p. That was the definitive format for that franchise.
Absolutely. Okay, it is time for Turbo Mode.
You what?
So I'm going to fly through a few of these stories. We've probably got just about enough time to talk about all of them if we want to, because there's not that many, but it's up to you. You don't have to talk about them. That's the whole point of Turbo Mode. So we'll start with Wreckfest. It's just got a new Nintendo Switch trailer. Netflix Sonic Prime has got a teaser. TikToker Benny P. Video has been sharing the story of adopted two lost Nintendogs. Adopted two lost Nintendogs, Tyson and Enzo. Okay. Summer Game Fest showcase has a date of the 9th of June. Marvel's Midnight Suns has been delayed to Q3 or Q4 2022. Monster Hunter Rise will be getting a 13 gig update following the release of Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. And Stardew Valley has sold more than 20 million units. I'm going to pick up on a couple first, and then I'm going to come to Al and then Anton. So first of all, for me, Wreckfest. I have played Wreckfest. I think it's a brilliant game. I think on the Switch, it could be really good. I'm going to get your guys' thoughts on the trailer in a minute, particularly Al, just because this could be Al's kind of game and I'm interested to see what he makes of it. The other one I wanted to mention was Stardew Valley. What an incredible amount of units for an independent sort of solo team to... just incredible. 20 million is just unbelievable. And yeah, those are the two main ones I wanted to pick up on. Al...
Well, I'm absolutely with you on Wreckfest. I mean, I was watching the latest release trailer and I still can't believe it's running on a Switch. It looks phenomenal. I mean, there's just, when cars are smashing into each other, there's debris flying in all directions and the game still looks stunningly good. It is a technical marvel what they're managing to do with that. So long as when it actually runs, it still runs at a decent frame rate, but judging by the trailer, it looks like it's doing just fine. I cannot wait to play it. Because unlike you, I've not played it on any other platform. I'm now holding out for the Switch, and I can't wait to try and play that particularly in multiplayer, it looks like it would be hilarious. I'm so excited.
Genuinely, that is one of the things that's really exciting me about Wreckfest on the Switch is the potential of us playing it or playing it online with, you know, with the Discord channel. And it's kind of one of those games, particularly the real wrecking levels where you just
everyone kill everyone. Mike.
That's pretty much the premise of every game we play the podcast. But yeah, so I'm with you on Wreckfest.
Yeah, so I like that was number one. The Marvel Midnight Suns game being delayed, again, I'm actually not too unhappy about that because the game is shaping up to be something potentially really quite good. I mean, I hadn't paid much attention to it since it was first announced. I forget where they showed it to us first. It was in one of the directs, I think it popped up briefly, and I thought, ooh, that looks interesting. And then we've got a few more sort of trailers came out, a few little bits, because it was Fraxis who are doing it, who they've done some games in the past that I have loved, you know, like Civilizations and all kinds of good stuff. And it turned out that this was a tactical RPG and it's using cards. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I don't know if I've seen that with the Marvel universe before. And it's got some interesting Marvel characters kicking around in there. There's like Blade and all kinds of kind of cool characters. And this is shaping up to be a potentially really good game. If it can follow in the footsteps of something like XCOM or XCOM 2 and stuff, you know, all those really good tactical games that have come out of that development house, then yeah, I'm happy for them to delay this a little bit. I can wait till Q3 or Q4 for this because it's probably worth waiting for. And I'm just going to, you know, second your opinions on Stardew Valley selling 20 million units. That is staggering, but well deserved and well earned. It's cool. I'm going to assume Anton's very excited about the Netflix Sonic trailer, however.
Yeah, you know, you are right on the money. Not to say I'm not excited for Wreckfest, because I have loved that game and Stardew Valley. Literally one person making that game and selling this many units is just madness. But yeah, Sonic Prime looks quite fun. It's coming at an interesting time where Sega has been reinvesting in the Sonic IP a lot, with Sonic Frontiers looking to be the largest and kind of best put together title, or at least the longest time in the oven Sonic game in a real, real long time, and a Sonic movie. And now we've got this new Sonic Prime with, a new voice actor, kind of shaking up the franchise a little. Quite exciting. And yeah, got the Summer Game Fest coming back, which will be nice and intriguing, full of news for us. And yeah, the Monster Hunter Rise 13GB is quite annoying. So it seems like what they're doing is when the Sunbreak DLC comes out, is they're just going to have it as part of the main game. And when you buy the DLC, it kind of activates it. And it's going to be mandatory to have this most recent update to continue playing online. So people are a little bit cross that they're going to have to basically give up 13 gigabytes of space for some DLC that they might not actually play. I think this is more common on some of the other consoles than on the Nintendo Switch, just because space is so sacred on the Switch. It's a quite annoying practice that seems to float around these days.
That is uncool.
Very uncool. But some very cool news stories in Turbo Mode this week. And yeah, lots to look forward to. Actually, the Sonic Prime show, I do want to watch. I haven't watched the teaser yet. I saw it the other day and I keep meaning to actually sit down and check it out properly. But
it's all about 10 seconds long, if that.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's one of those where I was like, oh, must watch that. And it's not come up in my Twitter feed. So I haven't accidentally fallen into it, if you see what I mean. So I will make a point of watching it 10 seconds after the show for 10 seconds. It is time for rumours.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
So the Italian voice actor for Untitled The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild sequel has leaked key plot details. Now, we're not going to go into them because, you know, spoilers and all that. But if you want to, you can Google them if you so wish. Anton, have you Googled? I'm going to say yes, you have.
I would not dare, no. The person is a character that is from the original and did the voice in the original. So they seem fairly credible. So definitely stay safe out there. Don't click on any clickbait articles or fan theory videos. Who knows what they're going to be telling you?
It's safe to say they're not going to do the voice in the next game.
I mean, just thinking that.
God, that's not a good move. What? I mean, did they do this deliberately or did they just accidentally leak them while while I'd be interviewed? Or, I mean, do you even know how this came about?
To be honest, that part, I read an article and that was spoil in the spoilers below section. So I didn't even bother looking into it. So, you know, this is an open concept podcast where we ask you to do the Googling if you want to.
We'll signpost it to you, but we're not going to tell you anything about it and we don't want to know. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to be looking that up because I don't want to find out about most games. Actually, we're talking about this on Roundup the other day, a game that the one we were talking about the other day, Anton, that's a classic that I'll tell you exactly what it is if I have a look here at the
House of the Dead.
No, Stanley Parable, the Ultra Deluxe Stanley Parable. So I never played the original, but in the same way I could find out exactly what, you know, what's, well, I know it's a bit kind of out there, but I could find out the gist of what actually happens in the game. But I'm going to play it at some point, and I'm not going to do that because it's a game that I want to go in without any preconceived ideas. And I think that's the same for this. It's such a big title that people have waited so long for. It's kind of a shame just to kind of, you know, just don't Google it. Don't do it. That's what I'm saying. That's my thoughts. But yeah, maybe.
We need to delete this bit. Just forget. Don't even tell people that it's out there.
What?
Just
what are you talking about? What game? Never happened. Also, credible leaker Zippo has shared Sonic Team is developing a 2D Sonic game. It'll be the first time they've developed a 2D Sonic game in nearly 30 years and will follow up to the Sonic Advance and Sonic Rush series. Sonic, Tails and Knuckles will be playable. Yeah, I mean, this would be great. I would be totally down for this. I know we've had other 2D Sonic games and Sonic Mania being the most recent kind of big one that's worked well. We had Sonic 4 a few years ago as well, which was kind of a mixed bag. But yeah, Sonic Mania, the team that's involved in that, will they be involved in any way? Because I would have a feeling that Sonic Team would certainly do worse than to get them involved.
Sadly, it doesn't appear so. So the logic behind this apparently is in the same way that the Sonic Mania fan team that created that masterpiece had kind of went ahead and made a, you know, couple years removed successor to the original classic games. This will be a couple years removed sequel to where Sonic Rush ended off. And, you know, being a 2D Sonic game for the first time developed in-house with the main team, which will be interesting as they've only really done the big Sonic games. The 2D games that we've had over this past 30-year window have been done by B teams. You know, not bad teams, but it hasn't been the proper Sonic team. So it'll be exciting to see their reflections onto, I guess, some of their more classic work and how they, you know, do a kind of proper, high-quality, I guess, almost AAA-ish 2D Sonic game. And how far they push it in terms of budget and scale.
I wonder how much of the original Sonic A team is actually still in the Sonic A team and how many of them have, you know, moved on. Because, I mean, the old games are, they're going back some now. So I imagine there must be some churn. There must be a fair bit of new blood in that team. I guess it can't all be the same guys and gals that were doing this 20 odd years ago, right?
I mean, there's probably going to be some, but it's probably unlikely that many of them will be still involved in this. But it's kind of nice, you know, historically that they are doing this, and it seems like a good time. Sonic's got a bit of a revival going at the moment, so I think it'd be nice for them to... What I'd really like is them to stop this kind of horrible past of bad game, good game, bad game, okay game, and it'd be really nice for them to have a bit more consistency with the Sonic franchise, because it's a really good franchise and it's one that I am really fond of because I grew up with it. I was Sonic, as was Anton, as Anton still is. And I think there's a lot of great Sonic titles. Actually, some of the ones that they mentioned as well, the Sonic Rush games are actually really good. So it'd be actually quite good to go down that route as well. So I'm fairly optimistic, Anton, despite being curious as to who's involved.
Yeah, admittedly, most of the 2D Sonic games have been all right. As you mentioned, Sonic 4 was not one of those. So, you know, I'm optimistic. I think they did some really interesting stuff, especially with those Rush titles, taking advantage of the more modern hardware to have these big, massive levels that you can noom through using the modern Sonic skill set, which looks to be getting a little bit of a revision with Sonic Frontiers. They could hopefully iterate on the franchise a little here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, when have we ever had a bad Mario game? Mario. I mean, sort of a main-ish. I mean, I don't mean things where they've just randomly stuck a Mario name onto it, but, you know, it's a proper Mario game. It's been a really consistent franchise. I've never really thought about it before, but I'm struggling to think of a bad Mario game.
Oh, I think that the closest we've got is, I guess, a mediocre. Like, I know people were not very fond of New Super Mario Bros. U when it first came out, but to be honest, I think that was just because we had, like, five games that were, like, in the New Super Mario Bros. Franchise and, like, under a decade. I think people were just a bit burnt out at that point, and it's actually quite a good game. Debatably, probably some of the early spin-offs, like your Mario's Time Machine and all that sort of stuff, probably doesn't make the top of anybody's list. But for the main franchises that, you know, the games that Miyamoto probably actually touched, I'm sure there's never been a bad one.
Yeah, I even just had a look to see what people's opinion was, and it's kind of, there's not really one. It's weird. It's which is testament to Nintendo and the franchise itself. But and I guess you look back at that big battle in the 90s and where that all went wrong for Sega and
I'm just gonna put my Nintendo smug Nintendo hat on here.
Well, the interesting thing was, of course, that Sega was in control for a lot of that time. It's just that Nintendo's longevity kind of saw through, and once we got out of that 16-bit era, Nintendo flourished and Sega didn't. And I think it's a really interesting one. There's some great shows if you've never watched. I think there's one on Netflix which is really good. I think it's a six-parter about the history of gaming, but there's another one which is just about Sega and Nintendo, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's very good. So I'm sure Anton will have seen it.
Nevertheless, the best place to find out about the failures of Sega is on the prequel, where we have tons of episodes delving into some of the retro oddities such as the Nomad, the Fairy 2X, and more.
Absolutely. What a segue. That was great. And with that, let's move on to the quiz.
I have so many questions.
All right, let's do a little bit of quizzing, shall we? So at the moment, Anton is slightly out in front. It's 6 to Anton, 3 to Mike. I wonder if you can call it back a little bit.
I'll give it a go.
It's. I'm not going to give you any hints about genres. There's no particular theme. I just decided to have some fun this week. So the first game is a fighting game from 2002. Fire away.
Dead or Alive 4.
Nope.
SNK versus Capcom.
Nope. 2. It was released on the arcade, also in the GameCube, the PS2, and the Xbox.
Super Smash Bros. No, that's what I'm saying. What are you talking about?
Nope, but you've had your guess, you Wally.
Is it Soul Calibur 2?
Oh, Anton, goodness sake, man. Stop being so good.
Yeah, well done, Anton. I probably wouldn't have got it, to be honest, so I don't mind him winning that one.
I didn't even get into any title. My next thing was going to be, it's a third in the franchise, and then I was going to have you guys going, 3-3-3, and then I was going to go, yeah, but the first one in the franchise was a different name. So the second one in the franchise actually started the naming convention, so the second game is actually the first game, and the third game is the second game.
Sure.
Complicated, huh?
And neither of them were Smash Brothers.
No, neither one was Smash Brothers. All right, well, that didn't last long. Let's try the second game and see how quickly Anton gets this one.
Can you mute Anton?
That's a great idea. We probably can. Except the fact he records his audio locally, so, you know, he'll still get the right answer in the audio. I just won't hear it.
That's a good point.
Okay, the second game is an action-adventure game from 2008.
Action Adventure 2008, Halo 2.
Nope. I'm going to have fun with this one.
More of a first person shooter, anyway.
Bionic Commando.
Nope. It was released on macOS, Windows, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, the Wii, the Xbox 360, and there were also versions on the Nintendo DS and the PSP.
Star Trek Legacy or something.
Nope.
Crash of the Titans.
Nope. Oh, I've got so much fun. Developed by Traveller's Tales or TT Fusion on the DS.
Action Adventure.
Yeah.
Is it... What were the other systems you said? Mac OS?
Mac OS, Windows, PS2, PS3, the Wii, the 360, the DS and the PSP.
Okay. Action Adventure. I want to say, was it... James Bond. Not GoldenEye, but the other one. But I can't can't remember which one, but is that a James Bond game?
No.
Okay, fine. Okay, forget that idea.
Oh, is it a Crash Over Mutants?
No, no, it's not. It provided brick-based family fun.
Tetris Reloaded.
No.
Steven Spielberg's Bloombox?
No. A range of characters with different abilities were available and you could use them to solve puzzles.
Characters with different abilities and you could use them to solve puzzles in an action-adventure game. Lego Star Wars?
Nope.
What was the clue before that one, if I may ask?
Brick-based family fun.
Okay, all right. Is it Bomberman Adventurer?
No. You could replay levels. In fact, it was a really high level replayability because you could use your newly unlocked characters to solve puzzles that were previously unsolvable.
Is it Lego Indiana Jones?
It is!
Yes!
Well done! I was going to go through as many generic Lego game things as I possibly could and hope you just have to list off every single Lego game possible.
GG.
Okay, thank you.
Well done, Mike. Good job. Good job, buddy. You could hear the genuine happiness in my voice that you got one there.
Yeah. Well, I got the Lego theme, which in the first place, but the Indiana Jones. And the only reason I said that is because I know Star Wars was the kind of slightly before that, the second one, and the first one was before that. And I remember there being a spate of about four or five different franchises all at the same time. But Indiana Jones was a big one. Harry Potter would have probably been my next one, but.
Yeah, well, there are many good ones. Well, there's now a bonus point up for grabs.
Oh, no.
The bonus point is to the first one of you to tell me what the game's full name was.
Oh, for...
You've given me Lego Indiana Jones. What was its full name?
Oh, man. This is tough. Was it... Lego.
You've got one chance, so be careful. Think about it.
Lego Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No.
Lego Indiana Jones, we didn't put them in a fridge this time.
No. It was the it was called Lego Indiana Jones The Original Adventures.
Oh, right. I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically what I said.
Yeah.
I
mean, Anton got it right. It's fine. Good point. No, 1-1.
It's 1-1.
I'm taking it.
We need a drum roll. That's a rubbish drum roll, but add a drum roll after it's in post, Mike.
Toilet roll more than a drum roll, but we'll carry on.
Okay, I think I made Anton go first last week, so Mike, you're going first this week.
Mm.
What year did the game 1942 come out?
Come on.
1942.
Didn't come out in 1942, I'm going to put money on that. But, this is tough.
I'm having fun with this week's quiz.
I think it was quite early, and I'm going to say 1986.
Anton?
Oh, that's an awkward place. I'm going to go 1987.
Well, we have a winner. It's not a tie. That's good. I like having a winner. That means the score is now... Anton 6, Mike 4.
Yeah,
I'm
actually 1-1.
It was 1984.
Wow, I was going to go that as well, but I thought maybe hedge my bets a bit. But yeah, I think I had it on the Spectrum, but I don't know what else it was on because I think it was on everything, wasn't it?
I was thinking NES territory, so that's why I went later.
Well, that was where I was worried because I'm sure it was certainly around at that point I would have played it. I wouldn't have played it as early as 86 because I didn't play games when I was 3.
Yeah, well, the original was just on arcade.
Right. Okay.
The game, there were various sort of follow-ups that appeared on different consoles, but the 1942 game was just arcade.
Well, I don't remember just the 1942 game. I remember one of the... It had like a subtitle, 1942 something something, but I don't know what it was, but that's interesting. Well, there you go. I'm delighted.
Congratulations.
he's on his comeback. He's on his way. And
I'm happy with that where we are.
You
right
should
now.
Be.
That's pretty good.
You're up against the master. You're up against Anton here. Anton literally knows everything about every game ever made. And you still got 4 points against him.
If this was Mastermind, he would be Anton Antonsen. Well, actually, you would because you're the presenter, but never mind.
Well done, chaps.
Yeah, well done. Good. Well done, Anton. You're still winning. 6-4. We'll be back for another quiz next week. Just a quick reminder, nsukp.co.uk/support-us if you'd like to come and join us as one of our Patreons. Come and join us in the Discord chat. There's a bunch of extra stuff for you as well. Anton, what else do we need to mention?
Generally on the website, we've got details for everything, including things that we forget, such as being able to email Alistair at podcast@nsukp.co.uk. We've got the YouTube videos up there as well, where we're trying vaguely for a video a week, give or take. It's not an official schedule, but there's always something new coming up there. And I'm trying to think what else. At Twitter, NSUK Podcasts, always up for a blitter. And of course, at least me and Mike are on Twitter as well. I'm Anton Winters _. Mike is our songwriter, am I correct in saying?
No, I'm Mike McDermott. It's updated. It's updated. It's been like that for about a year. But I mean, to be fair, I would have been that when we started the podcast. So yeah.
Indeed. And I think the only other thing that we would say is, well, check out the website, obviously, nsukp.co.uk, because it's very good. And Anton spends a lot of time on there, updating it, making it look pretty and shiny. And finally, if you've not already done so, we would very much appreciate reviews on the iTunes store, because they are, as we've said many times in the past, exceedingly helpful in helping us bump our way up rankings. We consistently seem to end up fairly high up charts and then fall back down again, and then we get a few reviews and we fly up the charts again, and it's wonderful. So yeah, reviews really do help us. So yeah, yeah, go on there and chuck us a glorious 5-star review, or a hater review, because they make me laugh. So
no,
you know,
I don't like hater reviews. I'm not
and they make Mike grumpy, which seems
better. I'm not robust enough. But thank you very much for listening. As always, we will be back in a week's time with another episode. Until then, we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Cheerio.
R5.